shakes her head, and her hair flies out around her ears. It's dirty and blonde and always cut in a sharp line above her jaw and across her forehead.
"Just the time of year,"
she says. "Autumn. Back to school. Reminds me of my own school days. You can't go back, Simon. You can never go back." She rubs her nose on her cuff again, then rubs her cuff into the goat's fur. I don't point out that Eb's never really left Watford. I don't want to make fun of her. It seems like a pretty sweet deal to me, spending your whole life here. "Not everyone came back," I say. Her face falls.
"Did we lose someone?"
"Eb's brother died when they were young. It's one of the reasons she's so melancholy. She never got over it. I don't want to set her off again." "No," I say. "I mean, Baz. Basil didn't come back."
"Oh," she says. "Young Master Pitch. Surely he'll be back. His mother did so value education."
"That's what I said."
"Well, you know him best,"
she says. "That's what I said too." Eb nods and pets the goat.
"To think you used to be at each other's throats."
"Oh, we're still at each other's throats." She looks up at me doubtfully. She has narrow blue eyes, bright blue, brighter somehow because her face is so dirty. "Eb," I insist, "he tried to kill me."
"Not successfully,"
she shrugs.
"Not recently."
"He's tried to kill me 3 times, that I know of. It doesn't actually matter whether it worked."
"It matters a bit,"
she says.
"Besides, how old was he the first time? 11, 12? That hardly counts."
"It counts with me," I say.
"Does it?"
I huff. "Yes, Eb, it does. He hated me before he even met me."
"Exactly,"
she says. "Exactly."
"I'm just saying. Been a long time since I had to spell you two apart."
"Well, there's no point in throwing down all the time," I say. "Doesn't get us anywhere. And it hurts. I suspect we're saving up."
"For what?"
she asks. "The end."
"The end of school?"
"The end of the end," I say. "The big fight."
"So you were saving it, and then he didn't come back for it?"
"Exactly," I say.
"Well, I wouldn't lose hope,"
Eb says.
"I think he'll be back. His mother always valued a good education. I miss her this time of year."
She wipes her eyes on her sleeve. I sigh. Sometimes with Eb, you're better off just enjoying the silence and the goats. 3 weeks pass. 4, 5, 6. I stop looking for Baz anywhere he's supposed to be. Whenever I hear someone on the stairs outside our room now, I know it's Penny. I even let her spend the night sometimes and sleep in his bed. There doesn't seem to be any immediate danger of Baz bursting in and lighting her on fire for it. The roommate's anathema doesn't prevent you from hurting anyone else in your room. I hassle Neil a few more times, but he doesn't even hint that he knows where Baz is. If anything, it seems like Neil's hoping that I'll turn up some answers. I feel like I should talk to the mage about it, about Baz, but I don't want to talk to the mage. I'm afraid he might still be planning to send me away. Penny says it's pointless to avoid him.
It's not like you'll fall off the mage's radar.
But maybe I have, and that bothers me too. The mage is always gone a lot, but he's hardly been at Watford at all this term, and whenever he is here, he's surrounded by his men. Normally, he'd be checking on me, calling me to his office, giving me assignments, asking for help. Sometimes I think the mage actually needs my help. He can trust me better than anyone. But sometimes I think he's just testing me, to see what I'm made of, to keep me in order. I'm sitting in class one day when I see the mage walking alone towards the Weeping Tower. As soon as class ends, I make for the tower. It's a tall red brick building, one of the oldest at Watford, almost as old as the chapel. It's called the Weeping Tower because there's a vine that grows in every summer and creeps from the top down. and because the building has started to sag forward over the years, almost like it's slumping in grief. Eb says not to worry about it falling. The spells are still strong. The dining hall is on the ground floor of the tower. The whole ground floor. And then above that are classrooms and meeting rooms and summoning chambers. The Major's office and sanctum are at the very top. He comes and goes as he needs to. The Mage has the whole magical world to keep track of, in the UK anyway, and hunting the humdrum takes up a lot of his time. The humdrum doesn't just attack me. That isn't even the worst of it. If it were, the other magicians probably would have thrown me to him by now. When the humdrum first showed up, almost 20 years ago, holes began appearing in the magical atmosphere. It seems like it, can suck the magic out of a place, probably to use against us. If you go to one of these dead spots, it's like stepping into a room without air. There's just nothing there for you. No magic. Even I run dry. Most magicians can't take it. They're so used to magic, to feeling magic, that they go spare without it. That's how the monster got its name. One of the first magicians to encounter the holes said they were like an insidious humdrum, a mundanity that creeps into your very soul. The dead spots stay dead. You get your magic back if you leave, but the magic never comes back to that place. Magicians have had to leave their homes because the humdrum has pulled the magic out from underneath them. It'd be a disaster if the humdrum ever came to Watford. So far, he usually sends someone else, or something else, some dark creature, in after me. It's easy for the humdrum to find allies. Every dark creature in this world and its neighbours would love to see the mages fall. The vampires, the werewolves, the demons and banshees, the manticore, the goblins. They all resent us. We can control magic and they can't. Plus, we keep them in check. If the dark things had their way, the normal world would be chaos. They'd treat regular people like livestock. We, magicians, need the normal people to live our normal lives, relatively unaffected by magic. Our spells depend on them being able to speak freely. That explains why the dark creatures hate us. But I still don't know why the humdrum has targeted me specifically. Because I'm the most powerful magician, I suppose? Because I'm the biggest threat? The mage says that he himself followed my power like a beacon when it was time to bring me to Watford. Maybe that's how the humdrum finds me too. I take a winding staircase to the top of the Weeping Tower, where it opens up into a round foyer. The school seal is laid out in marble tile on the floor and polished till it looks wet, and the domed ceiling has a mural of Merlin himself calling magic up through his hands into the sky, his mouth open. He kind of looks like the guy who hosts QI. There are two doors. The Mage's office is behind the tall, arched door on the left, and his sanctum, his rooms, is behind the smaller door on the right. I knock on his office door first. No one answers. I consider knocking on the door to his rooms, but that feels too intimate. Maybe I'll just leave him a note. I open the door to the Mage's office. It's warded, but the wards are set to welcome me. Then I walk in slowly, just in case I'm disturbing him. It's dark. The curtains are drawn. The walls are normally lined with books, but a bunch have been taken down, and they're piled in stacks around a desk. I don't turn on the light. I wish I'd brought some paper or something. I don't want to scrounge around on the Major's desk. It's not the sort of desk that has post-it notes and a while-you-were-out pad. I pick up a heavy fountain pen. There are a few sheets of paper on his desk, lists of dates, and I turn one over and write, "Sir, I'd like to talk to you when you have a moment, about everything, about my roommate." And then I add, "T. Basilton Grim Pitch." And then I wish I hadn't, because of course the major knows who my roommate is, and now it sort of looks like I've signed it. So then I do sign it. Simon. Simon, someone says, and I startle, dropping the pen. Miss Possibelf is standing in the doorway but doesn't step inside the office. Miss Possibelf is our magic words teacher and the dean of students. She's my favourite teacher. She's not exactly friendly, but I think she genuinely cares, and she seems more human sometimes than mage, even though she's not exactly human, I don't think. She's much more likely to notice if you're feeling sick or miserable or if your thumb is hanging off by a thread. Miss Possibelf, I say. The mage isn't in.
I see that. Do you have business here?
I thought he might be here. There were a few things I was going to talk to him about.
He was here this morning, but he's left again.
Miss Possibelf is tall and broad, with thick silver plait hanging down her back. She's impossibly graceful and impossibly eloquent, and if she's talking to you directly, her voice kind of tickles your ears.
You could talk to me, she says.
She still doesn't come in. She must not have permission to cross the wards.
Well,
I say, it's partly about Basil. He hasn't come back to school.
I've noticed, she says.
Do you know if he's coming back? She looks down at her wand, a walking stick, and moves the handle in a circle.
I'm not sure.
Have you talked to his parents? I ask. She looks up at me.
That's confidential.
I nod and kick the side of the major's desk, then realize what I'm doing and take a step away from it, tangling my fingers into the front of my hair. Miss Possibelf clears her throat prettily, even across the room. It sends a buzz up the back of my neck.
I can tell you, she says, that it's school policy to contact the student's parents when a child doesn't return for the term.
So you have talked to the Pitches? She narrows her dark brown eyes.
What do you hope to learn, Simon?
I dropped my hand in frustration. The truth. Is he gone? Is he sick? Has the war started?
The truth.
I keep waiting for her to blink. Even magicians blink.
The truth, she says, is that I don't have answers to any of those questions. His parents have been contacted. They were aware that he wasn't in school, but they didn't elaborate. Mr. Pitch is of legal age, like you, technically an adult. If he doesn't attend this school, I'm not responsible for his welfare.
But you can't just ignore it when a student doesn't come back to school. What if he's planning something?
Then that's a concern for the coven, not for the dean of students.
If Baz is off organizing an insurgency, I press, that's all of our concern. She watches me. I push my jaw forward and stand my ground. This is my standard move when I don't know what else to do, because if there's one thing I'm good at... Miss Possibelf closes her eyes, but still not like she needs to blink. It's more like she's giving in.
Good.
She looks back up at me.
Simon, I care about you, and I've always been honest with you. Listen to me. I don't know where Basilton is. Maybe he is off planning something awful. I hope not, for his sake and yours. All I do know is that when I talked to his father, he seemed unsurprised and ill at ease. He knew that his son wasn't here, and he didn't seem happy. Honestly, Simon, he sounded like a man at the end of his rope.
I puff a breath out hard through my nose and nod my head.
That's all I know, she says. I'll tell you if I learn more, if I'm able.
I nod again.
Now perhaps you should go to lunch.
Thank you, Miss Possibelf. As I move past her in the doorway, she tries to pat my arm, but I keep walking, and it's awkward. I hear the heavy oak door close behind us. I don't go to lunch. I go for a walk that turns into a run, that turns into me hacking away at a tree on the edge of the woods. I can't believe that my blade comes when I call for it. 17. Simon. I stop looking for Baz anywhere he's supposed to be. but I don't stop looking for him. I take walks in the wavering wood at night. Penny sees the look on my face and doesn't try to join me. Agatha's always off doing schoolwork. She must be buckling down this year. Maybe her dad's promised her a new horse or something. I used to love the wood. I used to find it calming. I realize after a few nights that I'm not just walking aimlessly. I'm covering the wood like I'm sweeping it. Like we swept it that year that Elspeth disappeared. All of us holding hands, walking side by side, marking off parcels as we move through them. I'm marking off parcels in my head now, casting for light and waving my blade back and forth to clear branches. I'll mow the whole fucking forest down if I go on like this. I don't find anything. And I frighten the sprites. And the dryad comes out to tell me that I'm basically a one-man walking woodland apocalypse.
What do you seek?
The nymph asks, hovering over the ground even though I've already told her that it gives me the creeps. She's got hair like moss, and she's dressed like one of those manga girls, with the Victorian boots and the umbrellas. Baz, I say, my roommate.
The dead one, with the pretty eyes?
Yes.
Is Baz dead?
I've never thought of him that way. I mean, he is a vampire, I guess.
Wait, are you saying he's dead? Like, really dead? All the blood eaters are dead.
Have you actually seen him eat blood? She stares at me. My sword is stuck in the ground beside my feet.
What do you seek, chosen one?
She sounds irritated now. She lets her green brolly rest on her shoulder. My roommate, Baz, the blood eater.
He's not here, she says.
Are you sure?
More sure than you.
I sigh and dig my sword deeper into the ground. Well, I'm not sure at all.
You're burning up goodwill here, magician.
How many times do I have to save the wood to win you people over?
There's no use saving it if you're just going to hack it down.
I'm looking for my roommate.
Your enemy, she counters.
She has grey-brown skin, ridged and rippled like bark, and her eyes glow like those mushrooms that grow deep in the woods.
It doesn't matter what he is, I say.
You know who I'm talking about. How can you be sure he isn't here? The dryad tilts her head back, like she's listening to the trees behind her. Her every move sounds like a breeze blowing through branches.
He isn't here, she says, unless he's hiding.
Well, of course he's hiding. He's hiding bloody somewhere.
If we can't see him here, magician, neither will you.
I pick up my sword and sheath it at my hip. But you'll tell me if you hear anything.
Probably not.
You're impossible.
I'm improbable.
This is important, I say. A very dangerous person is missing.
Not dangerous to me. She hisses, not dangerous to my sisters. We don't bleed. We don't play petty games of more and most.
Perhaps you've forgotten that Pitch is the house of fire. I gesture to the woods behind her, all of it flammable. Her head snaps up. Her smile creaks down. She switches her umbrella to her other shoulder.
Fine.
Fine?
If we see your handsome blood eater, we'll tell him you're looking for him.
Not helping.
We'll tell the golden one then.
The golden one? Am I the golden one? She scrunches her nose and shakes her mossy hair.
Flowers bloom in it. Who then? The golden one. His golden one. Your pistol and stigma.
Pistol? Do you mean Agatha?
Sister Goldenhair.
You'll tell Agatha if you see Baz.
Yes.
Her umbrella twirls.
We find her peaceful.
I sigh and rub the back of my hand into my forehead. I've saved you at least 3 times, this whole forest. You know that, yeah?
What do you seek, chosen one?
Nothing. I throw my hands in the air and turn to leave, kicking at the nearest sapling. Nothing. Nothing good ever happens in the Wavering Wood. I walk the wood. I walk the fields. I cover the school grounds between classes, poking through empty buildings, opening long closed doors. Sometimes Watford seems as big on the inside as the walled grounds and the outer lands combined. There are secret rooms, secret hallways, entirely hidden wings that only reveal themselves if you know the right spell or have the right artifact. There's an extra story between the second and third floors of the cloisters. Penny calls it bonus content. It's an echo of the floor above it. All the same things happen there a day later. There's a moat below the moat, and warrens in the hills. There are three hidden gates, and I've only got one of them to open. Sometimes it feels like I've spent my whole life looking for the map or key that would make Watford, the whole world of the mages, make sense. But all I ever find are pieces of the puzzle. It's like I'm in a dark room, and I only ever have enough light to see one corner of it at a time. I spend most of my fifth year wandering the catacombs below the White Chapel, searching for Baz. The chapel's at the centre of Watford. It's the oldest building. No one knows whether Watford started as a school or something else, maybe a magic abbey or a mage's settlement. That's what I'd like to believe. Imagine it, a walled town with magicians living together, practically out in the open, a magical community. The catacombs sit beneath the chapel and beyond it. There are probably lots of ways down, but I only know of one. In our fifth year, I kept seeing Baz slip off towards the chapel after dinner. I thought it must be some plot, a conspiracy. I followed him to the chapel, through the high-arched, never-locked front doors, back behind the altar, behind the sanctuary and the poet's corner, through the secret door, and down into the catacombs. The catacombs are properly creepy. Agatha would never go down there with me, and Penelope only went with me at first when she still believed Baz might be up to something. She stopped after a few months. She stopped going to Baz's football matches with me too, and stopped waiting with me in the hallway outside the balcony where Baz takes violin lessons. But I couldn't give it up. Not when all my clues were just starting to come together. The blood on Baz's cuffs. The fact that he could see in the dark. He'd come back to our room at night and dress for bed without ever turning on the light. And then I found a pile of dead rats in the chapel basement, all pinched and used, like squeezed up lemons. I was alone when I finally confronted him. Deep in the catacombs, inside the children's tomb, Le Tombeau des Enfants. Baz was sitting in the corner, skulls stacked along the walls around him. "You found me," he said. "I already had my blade out. I knew I would. Now what?" He didn't even stand, just brushed some dust off his grey trousers and leaned back against the bones. "Now tell me what you're up to," I said. He laughed at that. Baz was always laughing at me that year, but it came out flatter than usual. There were torches staining the grey room orange, but his skin was still chalky and white. I adjusted my stance, spread my feet below my hips, squaring my shoulders. "They died in a plague," he said.
"Who?"
Baz raised his hand. I flinched back. He cocked an eyebrow and swept his arm in a flourish at the room around us. "Them," he said. "Les enfants." A lock of black hair fell over his forehead. "Is that why you're here? To track down a plague?" Baz stared at me. He was 16. We both were. But he made me feel 5. He's always made me feel like a child, like I'll never catch up to him, like he was born knowing everything about the world of mages. It's his world. It's in his DNA. "Yes, Snow," he said, "I'm here to find a plague. I'm going to put it in a steaming beaker and infect all of Metropolis." I gripped my blade. He looked bored. What are you doing down here? I demanded, swinging the sword in the air.
Sitting, he said.
No, none of that. I've finally caught you after all these months. You're going to tell me what you're up to.
Most of the students died, he said.
Stop it. Stop distracting me.
They sent the well ones home. My great-great-uncle was the headmaster. He stayed to help nurse the sick and dying. His skull is down here, too. Maybe you could help me look for it. I'm told I share his aristocratic brow.
I'm not listening.
Magic didn't help them, Baz said.
I clenched my jaw.
They didn't have a spell for the plague yet, he went on. There weren't any words that had enough power, the right kind of power.
I stepped forward. What are you doing here?
He started singing to himself. Ring around the rosy, a pocket full of posies.
Answer me, Baz.
Ashes, ashes.
I swung my sword into the pile of bones beside him, sending skulls rattling and rolling. He sneered and sat up, catching the skulls with his wand. As you were. They turn in the air and rolled back into place. Show some respect, Snow, he said sharply, then slumped and leaned back again. What do you want from me?
I want to know what you're up to.
This is what I'm up to. Sitting in a fucking tomb with a bunch of bones.
They're not just bones. They're students and teachers. Everyone who dies at Watford is entombed down here.
So?
So?
He repeated. I growled.
Look, Snow.
He got to his feet. He was taller than me. He's always been taller than me. Even after the summer when I grew 3 inches, I swear that jammy bastard grew 4.
You've been following me, he said, looking for me. And now you've found me. It's not my fault if you still haven't found what you're looking for.
I know what you are, I snarled. His eyes locked onto mine.
Your roommate?
I shook my head and squeezed the hilt of my sword. Baz stepped into my reach.
Tell me,
he spat.
I couldn't. Tell me, Snow.
He stepped even closer. What am I? I growled again and raised the blade an inch. Vampire! I shouted. He must have felt the force of my breath on his face. He started giggling.
Really? You think I'm a vampire?
Well, Alistair Crowley, what are you going to do about that? He slipped a flask out of his jacket and took a swig. I didn't know that he'd been drinking. My sword dipped. I tried to remind myself to stay battle ready and pulled it up again.
Stake through the heart?
He asked, falling back into the corner and resting an arm on a pile of skulls.
Beheading, perhaps?
That only works if you keep my head separate from my body, and even then I could still walk. My body won't stop until it finds my head. Better go with fire, Snow. It's the only solution. I wanted to just slice him in two, right there and then, fucking finally. But I kept thinking of Penelope.
How do you know he's a vampire, Simon? Have you seen him drink blood? Has he threatened you? Has he tried to put you in his thrall?
Maybe he had. Maybe that's why I'd been following Baz around for 6 months. And now I had him.
Do something, he teased. Save the day, Snow. Or the night.
Quick, before I...
What horrible thing shall I do? It's too late for everyone down here. There's just you to hurt, isn't there? And I don't think I'm in the mood to suck your blood. What if I accidentally turned you? Then I'd be stuck with your pious face forever.
Baz shook his head and took another pull at his flask.
I don't think undeath would improve you, Snow. It would just ruin your complexion.
He giggled again, mirthlessly, and closed his eyes like he was exhausted. He probably was. I was. We'd been playing cat and mouse at the catacombs every night for weeks. I dropped my sword, but kept it unsheathed, then stepped out of my stance. "I don't have to do anything," I said. "I know what you are. Now I just have to wait for you to make a mistake." He winced without opening his eyes.
"Really, Snow? That's your plan? Wait for me to kill someone? You're the worst chosen one who's ever been chosen."
"Fuck off," I said, which always means I've lost an argument. I started backing out of the tomb. I needed to talk this through with Penelope. I needed to regroup. "If I'd known it was this easy to get rid of you," Baz called after me, "I would have let you catch up with me a few weeks ago." I headed for the surface, hoping that he couldn't turn into a bat and fly after me. Penny said that was a myth, but still. I could hear him singing, even after I'd been walking for 10 minutes. "Ashes, ashes, we all fall down." I haven't been back to the catacombs since that night. I wait until I'm fairly sure everyone is in bed, hopefully asleep. Then I sneak down to the Whitechapel. 2 busts guard the secret door in the poet's corner. The most famous of the modern mage poets, Carol and Seuss. I've got some nylon rope, and I tie one end around Theodore's neck. The door itself, a panel in the wall, is always locked, and there isn't any key, but all you have to do to open it is possess a genuine desire to enter. Most people simply don't. The door swings open for me, and closed behind me. The air is immediately colder. I light a wall torch and choose my first path. Down in the winding tunnels of the catacombs, I use every revealing spell I know, and every finding spell. Come out, wherever you are. It's showtime. Scooby-dooby-doo, where are you? I call for Baz by his full name. That makes a spell harder to resist. Magic words are tricky. Sometimes to reveal something hidden, you have to use the language of the time it was stashed away, and sometimes an old phrase stops working when the rest of the world is sick of saying it. I've never been good with words. That's partly why I'm such a useless magician.
"Words are very powerful,"
Miss Possibelf said on our first day of magic words class. No one else was paying attention. She wasn't saying anything they didn't already know. But I was trying to commit it all to memory.
"And they become more powerful," she went on, "the more that they're said and read and written in specific, consistent combinations. The key to casting a spell is tapping into that power, not just saying the words, but summoning their meaning."
"Which means you have to have a good vocabulary to do magic, and you have to be able to think on your feet, and be brave enough to speak up, and have an ear for a solid turn of phrase. And you have to actually understand what you're saying, how the words translate into magic. You can't just wave your wand and repeat whatever you've heard somebody saying down on the street corner. That's a good way to accidentally separate someone from their bollocks." None of it comes naturally to me. Words, language, speaking. I don't remember when I learned to talk, but I know they tried to send me to specialists. Apparently that can happen to kids in care, or kids with parents who never talk to them. They just don't learn how. I used to see a counsellor and a speech therapist. "Use your words, Simon." I got so bloody sick of hearing that. It was so much easier to just take what I wanted instead of asking for it, or thump whoever was hurting me, even if they thumped me right back. I barely spoke the first month I was at Watford. It was easy not to. No one else around here shuts up. Miss Possibelf and a few of the other teachers noticed and started giving me private lessons, talking out loud lessons. Sometimes the mage would sit in on these, rubbing his beard and staring out the window. "Use your words," I imagined myself shouting at him, and then I imagined him telling me that it was a mistake to bring me here. Anyway, I'm still not good with words, and I'm shit with my wand, so I get by with memorization and sincerity. That helps, believe it or not. When in doubt, I just do whatever Penny tells me to. I work my way carefully through the catacombs, doing my level best with the spells I can make work for me. I find hidden doorways inside hidden doorways. I find a treasure chest that's snoring deeply. I find a painting of a girl with blonde hair and tears pouring down her cheeks. Actually pouring, like a gif carved into the wall. A younger me would have stayed to figure out her story. A younger me would have turned this into an adventure. I keep looking for Baz, or a clue. Every night I turn back when I get to the end of my rope. 18. Lucy.
Do you know these walls are 1,000 years old? There are spirits moving through them who speak languages no one is left to understand. But it doesn't matter, I guess. Nobody hears them. The walls are the same as when I walked them. The chapel, the tower, the drawbridge. The wolves are new, the fish beasts. Where did Davy find them, I wonder? What spell did he cast to bring them here? And what does he think they'll prevent? Paranoid, Mitt always said. He thinks everyone's out to get him. I think a few people might actually be out to get him, I argued. Only because he's such a spiteful git, she said. He cares too much about himself, agreed. About everything, I said. He can't let any of it go. You've been listening to him for too long, Lucy. I feel sorry for him. And if you'd listen to him, you'd realize that he's making sense. Why can't pixies and centaurs with mage heritage come to Watford? And why did my brother have to stay home, just because he isn't powerful? Your brother's an idiot, she said. All he cares about is Deaf Leopard. You know how much it hurt my mother when he was rejected. He has a wand, and he doesn't even know how to use it. My parents almost got a divorce over it. I know. Mitali softened. I'm sorry, but the school's only so big. It can't take everyone. We could make it bigger. Davy says so. Or we could build a new school. Imagine that. Schools all over the country for anyone with magic. She frowned. But the point of Watford is that it's the best education for the best magicians. Is that the point of Watford? Then Davy's right. It is elitist. Mitt sighed. Davy says we're getting weaker, I said, as a society. That wild, dark things will wipe us from the earth and let it reclaim our magic. Does he tell you that they live under your bed? I'm being serious, I said. I know, she said sadly. I wish you weren't. What does Davy expect you to do? What does he expect from any of us? I leaned towards her and whispered my answer. Revolution. I've been wandering, trying to find my way to you. The walls are the same, and the chapel, and the tower. The neckties are thinner, the skirts are shorter, but the colours are the same. I can't help but feel proud of Davy now. You'll think that's funny coming from me, but I can't help but feel proud of him now. He managed it, his revolution. He opened these doors to every child blessed with magic.
19. Simon. It's almost Halloween before I finally talk to the mage. He calls for me himself. A robin flies into Greek and drops a note onto my desk. The mage often has a bird or two flapping around him, robins mostly, and wrens and sparrows, like Snow White. He'd rather cast A Little Bird Told Me than use his mobile. When class is over, I head towards an outbuilding at the far end of the grounds, up against the outer wall. There are barns back there that have been turned into garages and barracks. His men are outside. Penny says she'd like the Major's men better if there were a few women among them. And they're gathered around a big green truck I've never seen before, something like a military truck with canvas walls. One of them is holding a metal box. They're taking turns reaching for it and watching their hands pass right through it.
Simon, the Mage says, stepping out of the garage.
He puts his arm around my shoulder and leads me away from the truck.
Here you are.
I would have come right away, sir, but I was in class, and the Minotaur said you would have sent a larger bird if it were an emergency. The Mage frowns.
The spell doesn't work with larger birds.
I know, sir. I'm sorry, he wouldn't listen.
Well, he claps my shoulder, it wasn't an emergency. I just wanted to see you, to check on you. Miss Possibelf told me about the attack, the bugs. She said it was the humdrum.
Flibbertigibbets. In magic words class, a whole swarm of them. I'd never even seen a swarm of flibbertigibbets before. We call them bugs because they're about the size of bumblebees, but flibbertigibbets are more like birds. One can kill a dog or a goat or a griffin. Two or three can take down a magician. They burrow into your ears and buzz so loud you can't think. First you lose your mind, and then they get to your brain, and you lose everything else. Flibbertigibbets don't attack people. Not usually. But they came in through the classroom window last week and surrounded me like a chattering orange cloud. The worst part was that dry, sucking feeling that always accompanies the humdrum's attacks. Everybody else in the class ran.
It felt like the humdrum, sir. But why would he send flibbertigibbets? They're hardly a threat.
Not for you, certainly.
The Mage rubs his beard. Maybe he just wants to remind us that he's out there. What did you hit them with?
Dead in the air.
Well done, Simon.
I think I killed some other things, too. Eb found pheasants in the field, and Rhys had a parakeet.
The Mage glances at the robin flitting above his shoulder, then squeezes my arm.
You did what you had to, and no one was hurt. Did you see the nurse?
I'm fine, sir.
I step closer.
Sir, I was hoping. I mean, have you made any progress with the humdrum? I see the men coming and going, but I don't... I could help. Penelope and me, we could help.
His hand slips from my shoulder, and he rests it on his hip.
There's nothing to report on that front. No breakthroughs, no attacks. Just the constant widening of the holes. I almost wish the humdrum would show his face again.
I shudder at the memory of that face. The Mage goes on,
to remind these backward fools what we're really up against.
I look over his shoulder at the truck. The men have been carrying boxes past us the whole time we've been talking.
Sir, did you get my note?
He narrows his eyes.
About the missing pitch boy.
About my roommate. He still hasn't come back.
The Mage rubs his beard with the back of his leather glove.
You're right to be concerned, I think.
The old families are closing ranks, calling their sons home, bolting their gates. They're readying to make a move against us.
Their sons?
He starts rattling off names. Boys I know, but not well. 6th, 7th, and 8 years.
But surely, I say, the families know that the humdrum will finish us if we don't stand together. He's more powerful than ever.
Perhaps that's part of their plan, the Mage says. I've stopped trying to figure these people out. They care more for their own wealth and power than for our world. Sometimes I think they'd sacrifice anything to see me fall.
How can I help, sir?
By being careful, Simon.
He puts his hand on my arm again and turns to face me.
I'm leaving again in a few hours, but I was hoping
in the light of this new attack, that I could convince you to heed my words. Leave here, Simon. Let me take you to the haven I spoke of. It's the farthest I can put you from danger.
I'd take a step back.
But it was just flibbertigibbets, sir. This time. No. Sir, I've told you. I'm fine here. I'm perfectly safe.
You're never safe, he says.
And he says it so fiercely it almost seems like a threat.
Safety. Stability. It's an illusion. It's a false god, Simon. It's clinging to a sinking raft instead of learning to swim.
Then I may as well stay here, I say, too loudly. One of the mage's men, Stephen, looks up at me. My voice drops.
If nowhere is safe, I may as well stay here with my friends, or I may as well fight. I could help you.
We lock eyes, and I see his fill with disappointment and pity.
I know you could, Simon, but the situation is very delicate right now. He doesn't have to finish. I know what he means. The mage doesn't need a bomb. You don't send bombs on reconnaissance missions or invite them to strategy meetings. You wait until you've run out of options, then you drop them. I nod my head, and then I turn away from him, walking back towards the heart of the grounds. I can feel his men watching me. They're all just a year or two older than I am. I hate that they think they're even older, that they feel so important. I hate the dark green breeches they wear and the gold stars on their sleeves.
Simon!
The mage shouts. I flatten my expression, then turn back. He's holding up a hand to shield his eyes from the sun. He gives me a rare smile, a small one.
The humdrum may be more powerful than ever, but you're more powerful than ever too. Remember that.
I nod and watch him walk back to the garage.
I'm late to meet Penelope.
20. Penelope. We're studying out in the hills, even though it's cold, because Simon doesn't like to practice where anyone can see him. He's got his grey duffel coat on and a green-on-green striped school scarf, and I should have worn trousers because the wind is blowing right through my grey tights. It's nearly sewn. The veil will close soon, and Aunt Beryl hasn't shown a whisker.
It is what it is,
Simon says, pointing his wand at a small rock sitting on a tree stump. The rock shivers, then collapses into a pile of dust. I can't tell if the spell is working, he says,
or if I'm just destroying things.
Every eighth-year student is tasked with creating a new spell by the end of the year, with finding a new twist in the language that's gained power, or an old one that's been overlooked, and then figuring out how to apply it. The best new spells are practical and enduring. Catchphrases are usually crap. Mundane people get tired of saying them, then move on. Spells go bad that way, expire just as we get the hang of them. Songs are dicey for the same reason. Almost never does a Watford student actually create a spell that takes hold. But my mother was only a seventh year when she worked out the lady's knot for turning, and it's still an incredibly useful spell in combat, especially for women, which Mum's a bit ashamed of, I think, to have a spell taught in the mage's offence workshops. Simon's been trying a new phrase every week since the beginning of term. His heart's not in it, and I don't really blame him. Even tried-and-true spells hiccup in his wand. And sometimes, when he casts metaphors, they go viciously literal. Like when he cast Hair of the Dog on Agatha during 6 year to help her get over a hangover, and instead covered her with dog hair. I think that's the last time Simon pointed his wand at a person, and the last time Agatha had a drink. He brushes the rubble off the stump and sits down, shoving his wand in his pocket.
Baz isn't the only one missing,
What do you mean? I point my wand at some chess pieces I've set on the ground. The game is on! The bishop falls over. I try again. The game is afoot! Nothing happens. This phrase has got to be good for something, I say. It's Shakespeare plus Sherlock Holmes.
The maid told me that the old families have been pulling their sons out of school.
Simon says,
2 seventh-year boys didn't come back, and Marcus, Baz's cousin, is gone. He's only a 6th-year.
Which one is Marcus?
Fit, blonde streaks in his hair, midfielder.
I shrug and stoop to pick up the chess pieces. I'm being fairly literal myself at the moment, because I've tried everything else with this phrase. I feel like it could be a good beginning spell, a catalyst. Is it just boys who haven't come back? I ask.
Huh?
Simon says.
Dunno. The maids didn't say.
He's such a sexist. I shake my head. Marcus, is he the one who got trapped in a dumb waiter in our 4th year?
Yeah.
That one's joined the other side, eh? Well, I'm shaking in my boots.
The mage thinks the families are getting ready for some big strike.
What does he want us to do about it?
He doesn't,
Simon says. I slip the chess pieces in my pocket. What do you mean?
Well, he still wants me to leave.
I must frown, because Simon raises his eyebrows and says,
I know, Penny, I'm not going anywhere. But if I stay here, then he wants me to lie low. He wants us to lie low. He says his men are working on it, and it's delicate.
I sit next to Simon on the tree stump. I have to admit, I sort of love the idea of lying low, of letting the mage get up to his mad business without us for once. But I don't like to be told to lie low, neither does Simon. Do you think Baz is with these other boys? I ask.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
I don't say anything. I really, really hate to talk to Simon about Baz. It's like talking to the Mad Hatter about tea. I hate to encourage him. He knocks some bark off the stump with the back of his heel. I lean into him because I'm cold and he's always warm, and because I like to remind him that I'm not afraid of him.
It makes sense,
he says.
21. The Mage. Books. Artifacts. Enchanted jewellery. Enchanted furniture. Monkey's paws. Rabbit's legs. Gnomes' noses. We take it all, even if I know it's useless to me. This exercise has more than one aim. It's good to remind the old families that I'm still running this show, this school, this realm. And there's not one of them who could do better. They call me a failure because the humdrum still drums on, stealing our magic, scrubbing our land clear. But who among them could pose a threat? Maybe Natasha Grimpitch could have put the humdrum in its place, but she's long gone, and none of her friends and relatives have even a fraction of her talent. I send my men to take my enemies' treasures, to raid their libraries. I show them that even a red-faced child in my uniform has more power than they do in this world. I show them what the names are worth. Nothing. But still, I don't find what I need. I don't find any real answers. I still can't fix him. The greatest mage is our only hope now. But our greatest mage is fundamentally flawed, cracked, broken. Simon Snow is that mage. I know it. Nothing like him has ever walked our earth. But Simon Snow, my Simon, still can't bear his power. He still can't control it. He's the only vessel big enough to hold it, but he is cracked. He is compromised. He is just a boy. There must be a way, a spell, a charm, a token that can help him. We are mages. the only magical creatures who can wield and shape power. Somewhere in our world, there is an answer for Simon. A ritual, a recipe, a rhyme. This isn't how prophecies work. This isn't how stories unfold. Incompletely. If there's a crack in Simon, then there's a way to mend him. And I will find it.
22. Simon.
I'm failing Greek, I think. And I'm lost in political science. Agatha and I get into a fight about going to her house for half-term break. I don't want to leave Watford, and I don't think she actually wants me to go home with her, but she wants me to want to, or something. I stop wearing my cross and put it in a box under my bed. My neck feels lighter, but my head feels full of stones. It would help if I could sleep, but I can't, and I don't really have to. I can just sort of get by on catnaps and magic. I keep having to kick Penny out of my room so she doesn't catch on to how I'm spending my nights.
But nobody's using Baz's bed, she argues.
Nobody's using your bed, I say.
Trixie and Keris push the beds together when I'm not there. There's probably pixie dust everywhere.
Not my problem, Penny.
All my problems are your problems, Simon.
Why?
Because all of your problems are my problems.
Go to your room.
Simon, please.
Go. You'll get expelled.
Only if I get caught.
Go. When Penny finally leaves, so do I. I give up on the catacombs and start haunting the ramparts instead. I don't really expect to find Baz up here. Where would he hide? But at least I feel like I'll see him coming.
Plus, I like the wind.
And the stars. I never get to see stars over the summer, no matter which city I end up in. There are always too many lights. There's a watchtower out there with a little nook inside, with a bench and a roof. I watch the mage's men coming and going all night in their military truck. Sometimes I fall asleep.
You look tired,
Penny says at breakfast. Fried eggs, fried mushrooms, baked beans, and black pudding.
Also,
she leans over the table.
There's a leaf in your hair.
Hmm? I keep shoveling in my breakfast. There'll be time for second helpings before class if I hurry. Penny reaches for my hair again, then glances at Agatha and pulls her hand back. Agatha's always been jealous of Penny and me, no matter how many times I tell her it's not like that. It's really not like that. But Agatha seems to be ignoring us both. Again. Still. We haven't spent any time alone since our argument. Honestly, it's been a relief. It's one fewer person asking me if I'm okay. I put my hand on her leg and squeeze, and she turns to me, smiling with the bottom half of her face.
Right, Penny says. We're meeting tonight in Simon's room after dinner.
Meeting about what? I ask.
Strategy,
Penny whispers. Agatha wakes up.
Strategy about what? About everything, Penelope says. About the humdrum, about the old families, about what's really happening on the mage's raids. I'm tired of lying low. Don't you feel like we're being left out?
No, Agatha says. I feel like we should be grateful for some peace.
Penny sighs.
That's what I thought too. But I'm worried that we're being lulled. Intentionally lulled.
Agatha shakes her head.
You're worried that someone wants us to be happy and comfortable?
Yes,
Penelope says, stabbing the air with her fork.
Perish the thought, Agatha says.
We should be in on the plan, Penelope says.
Whatever it is, we've always been in on the plan, even when we were kids. And we're adults now. Why is the mage sidelining us?
You think the mage is lulling us?
Agatha asks. Or is the humdrum doing it? Or maybe Baz?
She's being sarcastic, but Penny either doesn't notice or pretends not to.
Yes,
Penny says, and stabs the air again, like she's making sure that it's dead.
All of the above.
I wait for Agatha to argue some more, but she just shakes her head, shakes her corn silk hair, and scoops egg onto a toast. She doesn't look happy or comfortable. She's frowning, and her eyes are pinched, and I don't think she's wearing makeup. You look tired, I say, feeling bad that I'm just now noticing. She leans against me for a moment, then sits straight again.
I'm fine, Simon. You both look tired,
Penny declares.
Maybe you have post-traumatic stress disorder. Maybe you're not used to this much peace and quiet.
I squeeze Agatha's leg again, then get up to get us some more eggs and toast and tomatoes.
Lulled,
I hear Penny saying. 23. Penelope.
It was a murder of crows getting them both up here, and Agatha's still complaining. Penelope, this is a boy's house. We'll be expelled. Well, the damage is done, I say, sitting at Simon's desk. You're as likely to get caught leaving now as leaving later, so you may as well stay.
You won't get caught,
Simon says, flopping down on his bed.
Penny sneaks up here all the time.
Agatha is not happy to hear that. I ignore her. If she's moronic enough to believe that Simon and I have romantic feelings for each other after all these years, I'm not wasting my time talking her out of it. She deliberately sits as far as she can from both of us, even though that means sitting on Baz's bed. Then she realizes what she's done, and looks like she wants to stand up again. Her eyes dart around the room, as if Baz himself might walk out the bathroom. Simon looks just as paranoid.
Honestly, the pair of them.
I still don't know why we're having this meeting, Agatha says.
To pool our knowledge,
I say, looking around the room for materials.
This would be so much easier if we had a blackboard.
I raise my wand and cast a "See what I mean," then start writing in the air. What we know.
Nothing, Agatha says. Meeting adjourned.
I ignore her. The way I see it, there are three things we always have to worry about. One, I write, the humdrum.
What do we know about the humdrum?
That he looks like me, Simon says, trying to go along with me.
Agatha doesn't look surprised by this information. Simon must have told her what happened.
And that he wants something from me,
Simon continues.
That he comes after me.
And we know that he's been quiet, I say. Nothing but flibberty gibbets since June. Agatha folds her arms.
But the humdrum's still out there eating magic, isn't he?
Yes, I acknowledge, but not as much. I saw my dad on the weekend and he said the holes are spreading much more slowly than usual. I add this to my notes in the air.
We don't know that he eats it,
Simon says.
We don't know what the humdrum does with the magic.
Sticking to what we do know, I say, and write, 2. The war with the old families. I wouldn't call it a war, Agatha says.
But there have been skirmishes, yeah?
Simon says. And duels. Agatha huffs. Well, you can't walk into someone's house and demand to go through their attic without expecting a few duels. Simon and I both turn to look at her.
What do you mean?
I ask.
The mage, Agatha says. I heard Mother talking to a friend from the club. He's been raiding magicians' houses, looking for dark magic.
This is all news to me.
Has he raided your house?
He wouldn't, Agatha says. My father's on the coven.
What sort of dark magic?
Simon asks. Probably anything that can be used as a weapon, Agatha says.
Anything can be used as a weapon,
Simon says. I add to my notes, raids, dark magic, duels.
And we know that the old families have kept some of their sons from Watford,
Simon adds. Which could just be a coincidence, I say. We should do some legwork. Maybe the missing boys just went to university. Or maybe they're tired of being treated like villains, Agatha says.
Or maybe they're joining an army,
Simon says. I add to my notes, Pitch allies leaving school.
What about Baz?
Simon says. Agatha runs her hand along the mattress. We'll get there, I say. Let's focus on what we know. Simon keeps pushing.
Miss Possibelf thinks he's missing. She said his dad sounded scared.
I sigh and add a third column. 3. Baz. But there's nothing to write underneath it. I still don't think it's a war, Agatha insists. It's just politics, just like in the normal world. The mage has power, and the old families want it back. They'll bitch and moan and cut deals and throw parties.
It's not just politics.
Simon leans towards her, pointing.
It's right and wrong.
Agatha rolls her eyes.
But that's what the other side says, too.
Is that what Baz says?
He asks. I try to cut in. Simon.
It's not just politics,
he says again.
It's right and wrong. It's our lives. If the old families had their way, I wouldn't even be here. They wouldn't have let me into Watford.
But that wasn't personal, Simon, Agatha says.
It's because you're a normal.
How am I a normal?
He throws his hands in the air.
I'm the most powerful magician anyone knows about.
You know what I mean, Agatha says, and she's being sincere, I think. There's never been a normal at Watford. She's right, but I wonder who she's parroting.
I was prophesied,
Simon says, and it sounds so pathetically defensive. I try to think of a way to change the subject. Simon was prophesied, or someone was, over and over. The most powerful magician ever to walk the earth was coming, and he, or she, was supposed to get here just when the world of mages needed him most. And Simon did. The humdrum was eating our magic, the mage and the old families were at each other's throats, and then Simon arrived. He came into his power and lit up the magical firmament like an electric storm. Most magicians can remember exactly where they were that day. I can't. But I was only 11. My mum was giving a lecture. She said it felt like touching a raw wire and feeling the electricity shake you from the inside. Raw, scalding, scorching magic. Which is still how Simon's magic feels. I've never told him so, but it's awful. Just standing near him when he goes off is like taking a shock.